Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
All of it on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. On today's show, we're focusing on what we're all thinking about on Thanksgiving, food. Throughout the show, we will spotlight some of our favorite conversations with local chefs working all around the city. To kick things off, we'll hear my conversation with Sam Sifton, the founding editor of New York Times Cooking, whose latest cookbook has a very interesting premise. What if you had a recipe book without detailed step-by-step instructions? The goal of Sam's book, No Recipe Recipes, is to encourage home cooks to improvise and substitute, providing some guidelines for each dish, but no live or die measurements or ingredients. And hey, maybe you're listening right now in a bit of a panic about a last-minute Thanksgiving dish to throw together, and the idea of following a recipe feels extra stressful. This segment is sure to inspire you. Listeners, we did take calls in this segment, but as this is a rebroadcast, our phone lines will not be open. I started the conversation by asking Sam about the New York Times What to Cook newsletter that goes out to subscribers every Wednesday, and how his approach to the newsletter changed as a result of the pandemic.
Holy cow. I send that newsletter out 4 times a week, and I've done it for years. But this past year was in some ways the most difficult year of writing, because while I'd always taken a kind of empathetic approach to the newsletter, trying to put myself in the shoes of as many of our readers as possible, it seemed almost impossible some days to do that. The scope of the pandemic was such that people were experiencing their lives in like wildly divergent ways. We were dealing with income inequality over the year. We were dealing with a reckoning over race in America. We were dealing with the pandemic itself and our fears for our loved ones. And I'm here to tell you to make a frittata. Like, making that pivot was sometimes super difficult, but I felt necessary because I know that when times are hard, people turn to their kitchens and cook. They were forced to do that by the lockdowns in some cases. But I do know that people historically at NYT Cooking, we see when the news is bad, our numbers bump up. And so I thought, well, I'm just going to triple down on the empathy and get as many good recipes in front of people as possible.
So as you thought about it and you really think about home cooking in the past year, did you learn anything about home cooking?
Oh, absolutely. Look, most of us have never cooked so much as we have in the past year. I mean, it's just crazy how 3 meals a day, 7 days a week became a kind of norm for people who used to store sweaters in their ovens. You know, like, we weren't going out as much. We were supporting local restaurants with some takeout, but there was a lot of cooking. And that can lead to boredom and to kind of, you know, tuna casserole Tuesdays. And I was vehement that that was not going to happen for me or my readers. And so I worked really hard to make sure we were putting forth as much good new stuff as we could while unearthing great old stuff as well. Earlier in the show, you said, what have you learned? What do you reflect on? What do you wish you had done during the pandemic? I wish I had recorded every single meal I made. I wish I had that list.
Last spring, the Times dropped the paywall to its What to Cook collection. What went into that decision?
Well, empathy, I suppose. Mm-hmm. You know, we believe at NYT Cooking that we are a vital part of the mission of the New York Times to seek the truth and help people understand the world. We do that through food. We do that through our recipes. And at times when the news cycle is so intense that we feel that our work is a public service that needs to be put in front of the paywall, we take that down the paywall. And we did it for those recipes for that reason. We felt it was a public service to offer some good things to cook and eat.
There's a section in New York Times Cooking called What Our Food Reporters and Editors Make When They're Too Tired to Cook. What's your go-to, Sam?
Yeah, Well, my go-to is I order a pizza. I'm a Brooklyn boy. I want a pizza when I'm too tired to cook. But if that's impossible or that even seems crazy, what's the next best thing? I go with a grilled cheese sandwich. Lately, I've been doing interesting things with the grilled cheese. There's a recipe in No Recipe Recipes, so it's not really a recipe, for a grilled cheese with jalapeno, and I serve it with a fried egg on top of it and eat it like I'm de Blasio eating a pizza with knife and fork. I love that. I've made grilled cheese with kimchi, which is unbelievably good and super simple and easy to do. And if you're exhausted and don't want to cook anything else, that's a great go-to meal.
My guest is Sam Sifton. He has a new book out called No Recipe Recipes. Let's take a couple calls before we dive into the book. Let's go to line two, and it's Steve calling in. Hi, Steve. Thanks for calling All of It.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm great. What's your cooking life been like?
Well, I mean, I like to cook, but sometimes I don't feel like putting in all the effort. And so what I came up with, I really love eggplant parm, and I was not making it because it's too much work, too much prep. And so what I did was, instead of, because you have to, you know, egg it and then bread it and then fry it, and so I cut out that step, and I just peel it and slice it thin, and then put it in the baking dish. I used a good jarred spaghetti sauce, and you know, layer it with cheese and sauce, and you bake it, and you wouldn't know the difference.
Sounds like you found a pretty good hack there, Steve. Thanks so much. Carol is calling in from Irvington on line one, and Carol, you thoroughly believe in Sam Sifton's premise of no recipe recipes can work, right?
But by all means, one must not have to depend on a recipe book at no time at all, because mostly we were brought up to understand that women rule the kitchen. And so, especially when there are large families around, the mother would have to improvise so that she can get a bite in her baby's mouth. So we got any leftovers, anything that was surplus, and we just put it all together, and it came out fine.
Seems like it's about instinct for you.
Funny it is that I heard one Steve spoke before me about the eggplant parmesan. I was not a lover of eggplant. And then an old woman told me once, she said, you know, eggplant is a very good medicine to curb the thyroid problem. And so I started preparing eggplant. And I got eggplant, the white skin one, the purple skin one, the all colors I looked for. And funny it is, I was on Synthroid. Uh-huh. And I weaned myself off of it because I found that eggplant really did work.
Food as medicine. Many people believe in it.
Love it.
Carol, thank you for calling in. So, Sam, let's follow up on Carol. Carol endorses what you've done. What do you think is the biggest advantage, Sam, to cooking without a specific recipe?
Well, it's freeing in a way. I mean, it requires some confidence in the kitchen. And one of the reasons I'm pleased this book is coming out now is that we have, I think, as a nation, a little more confidence in our cooking because we've been cooking so much over the course of the year. And we've kind of like, we've dialed in our techniques. And now it's time to realize that, you know, when you look at a recipe and you think, oh, jeeps, I don't have that. And then you don't make the recipe, or you think you have to assemble this giant list. Not really. I mean, as the caller said, if you don't want to fry the eggplant and bread the eggplant, do all that stuff. So you just come up with a hack and realize, hey, that's pretty good. If there's enough cheese on it, it's probably pretty good. And then that leads you to do it again the next time. It's about, look, I always say that recipes are like sheet music. And I can make the dish exactly as the recipe requires. You can make the dish exactly as the recipe requires. And they'll be slightly different because we are slightly different and we cook in slightly different ways. What a no recipe recipe is like, it's like a prompt for improvisation. It's like a chord chart as opposed to a piece of sheet music. It's just like, look, you start in A, then you're going to go to C, back to A. And once you kind of accept that that's what you're doing, cooking as an improvisation, but within some rules, like you know basically when the onions are soft, you're going to have success where you mightn't have thought you would have success a year ago.
It's interesting. The skeptics, the words I'm seeing are anxious. The words are interesting.
Yep.
Anxious, intimidated, and suspicious.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. I was that way too. I really was. I was that way too. It does take a leap of faith for sure to say, I'm just going to cook this the way I want to cook it. But if you think about it, there are recipes that are no recipe recipes. I mentioned grilled cheese before. We all sort of know how to make a grilled cheese. I can give you a recipe that gets it a little crisper because I'm going to tell you to spread mayonnaise on the outside of the bread because that'll encourage crispiness in the crust when you fry it. I can specify 2.5 ounces of this cheese or that cheese. But really, you know how to make a grilled cheese sandwich. And if you know how to make a grilled cheese sandwich, you're well on your way to no recipe cooking.
Speaking of grilled cheese, you made a big impression with that grilled cheese and kimchi. Someone on Twitter wants to know what kind of cheese goes with grim kimchi on grilled cheese.
You see? There you go. Like, I don't know. You choose. I've done it with a low moisture mozzarella because there's a great Korean dish called buldak, cheese buldak, which is like a fire chicken thing that they coat with low moisture mozzarella at the end. And I thought maybe the heat would work with the mozzarella, but I did it with cheddar and it was great. So like, go for it.
Let's go to Stephanie calling in on line 3. Hi, Stephanie. Thanks for calling All of It. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you? So Sam and Allison, my daughter who lives a couple hundred miles away, we've been bake clubbing every week for 33 weeks. So on Sunday nights, we share either sweet or savory meals that we've decided about the week before. We sometimes go off the rails, go renegade, as we say, but a lot of your recipes are included. And I have to say, it's been analytical. It's helped our relationship. It's expanded my skills. It's been a wonderful experience. And I love Nora Ephron's meatloaf.
I love this whole bake club idea.
Thank you so much for saying. I think it's great. I have to offer an important caveat to the no recipe manifesto that I'm making here, which is that it doesn't really work with baking.
Too much chemistry, right?
You know? Too much chemistry there. You can do no recipe sweets, of course, but if you're baking, follow the rules.
My guest is Sam Sifton. His new book is called No Recipe Recipes. I want to walk people through what the book actually looks like so they understand. So there is this recipe you have for French toast hash, and you just list the ingredients: baguette, eggs, milk, butter, breakfast sausage, apples, maple syrup, no amounts. And then the instructions are very simple. Slice the baguette into thick slices. Whisk together the eggs and a splash of milk. Put in some vanilla, maybe some salt. It's like sort of like these nice little suggestions down the road. When you were writing this, I'm just curious about the rhythm of writing it, how you wanted to write these instructions so that they weren't so strict. I'm curious about the writing process, actually.
That's a great question, Allison. Thank you. The way I'll answer it is by saying that these recipes emerged from the practice of writing the newsletter. And the newsletter is deeply conversational, the NYT Cooking newsletter. And it's me writing to you, the recipient. And I try and make it as personal as I say, empathetic as possible. Therefore, if I'm gonna jump away from my job, which is to tell you about the new recipes that we have, to tell you about a no recipe recipe, I want it to be as kind of conversational as possible. This is a skill. I don't think it's a skill, but this is a practice that I learned about from reporting in restaurants and talking to chefs about things. chefs are terrible recipe writers in the main, because they speak in a kind of code to the people who work for them. And when I would ask them questions about how something was made, they would just tell me conversationally. And I realized that those were often much more effective routes to recreating restaurant food at home than asking for a proper recipe, which came and it was like 19 pages long. So I said, well, maybe I can do that for the readers, and just offer the confidence that you can get this done. You do know how to make that French toast. That's another kind of no recipe that a lot of us have ingrained in our muscle memory. We know how to mix the eggs and the milk. We know how to dip the thing. But then I thought, what if you put it all those things together to make a kind of hash, apples, sausages, the French toast. And here's how I'll tell you to make it. And what happens is yours is going to be very different from mine, but it's going to be equally delicious because the component parts are delicious. French toast, sausage, apple, maple syrup, butter. That's a win.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Let's continue my conversation with New York Times cooking founding editor Sam Sifton, who joined us to discuss his latest cookbook, No Recipe Recipes. While you will hear calls in this interview, this is a rebroadcast, so we're not taking new calls for this segment. The second half of our conversation kicked off with a call from Veronica, who wanted to talk about her love of rice.
Yeah, so I really love making fried rice, you know, because it's so versatile and it really gives me that opportunity, you know, to open the fridge and just take a look at, like, what do I have? And, I have vegetable, I have meat and all of that. And then, you know, then you put all these things together and you have great fried rice. And one thing I really love about it, too, is that you can flavor it in many different ways. Like if I want Asian flavor, so I can put soy sauce, sesame sauce. If I wanted like Mexican fried rice, you know, have cumin, all of that, or even Italian flavor. It's so versatile and it's so quick, and you can be very adventurous in putting it together. And that's it. And I love doing that. And whenever my friends call me and ask me, what can I do, you know? And I say, just make fried rice. It's easy. You know, you whatever leftover you have in the fridge, just put it all together and flavor it, and you're done.
Veronica, thanks for calling
in. That's true. It does require just one note of advanced planning that helps out. Whenever you make rice, make way more rice than you need, because then you will always have chilled or frozen cooked rice in your freezer or refrigerator, which makes for much better fried rice. Why? Because the chilling helps separate the grains of rice so that they don't get clumpy. If you try to make fried rice with, say, freshly made warm rice, it doesn't work out that well. It gets super clumpy and thick and gluey. But if it's chilled, the grains separate beautifully and you get that amazing dish that you love and have flavored and ingredient-ed as you choose.
In the book, there's kitchen sink rice and beans, weeknight fried rice, and then a dish you credit one of your kids with making, curried beans in rice. How did that make it into the book?
Yeah, that was just a magical moment, you know, when a kid takes to the stove and just flies solo and does whatever she wants, and she came up with that dish. And we make it all the time now. It's just so great, and it is a testament to no recipe making.
Freeform Puttanesca, aside from being like a great name for a punk band, sounds like it could be a lot of fun to make. Is this something that I'm trying to find something that people who aren't comfortable with this might be comfortable with.
Yeah. I think in looking at the book and in reading it, I hope if I've succeeded, I hope that I've built in enough information that you can see that the dirty little secret of no recipe recipes are they're recipes. They're just in a different form, a conversational form. And really what's been stripped out is the tyranny of 1.5 tablespoons. Because the fact of the matter is, if you like capers, you're going to put a lot of capers in the dish. If you like spicy food, you're going to put a lot of red pepper flakes into the dish. So the idea that that you can't make any of these recipes if you aren't like a whiz in the kitchen is specious to my mind. Like, I hope that there is enough information to lead a reluctant cook along the way to success that will lead to ever more confidence in the kitchen moving forward.
Let's go to Charlotte on line 4, who has a nice little hack to offer that she stumbled upon. Hi, Charlotte. Thanks for calling All of It.
Hi, Allison. I have found that if you do takeout food and you get those leftover tamarind stuff from Indian, or if you have olive juice with your olives or caper juice with your capers, it's a nice sort of briny, salty liquid to use that you've got kind of for free in a stir fry or frying anything up. Anyway, it's I've discovered that, oh my God, I don't even have to think about spices. I just pour in one of those things and it jazzes everything up.
Thanks for calling in.
Oh, that's so cool. I'm glad to hear that. There are a bunch of hacks like that that I have taken to over pandemic and that have been memorialized in NYT Cooking from some of my colleagues that I've taken off the reservation and made into no recipe recipes, like pickle brine, for instance. Always, if you have like good pickles, you spent way too much money on pickles at the farmer's market and you're done with the pickles and there's all this brine there. That is an amazing brine for chicken. An amazing brine. It's like a you brine chicken and pickle brine and then fry it. Oh boy, you are eating well. Same thing, of course. Great Samin Nosrat, a Melissa Clark recipe for feta brine chicken, which is really good.
Let's go to Mark on line 3 and Astoria. Hey, Mark, thanks for calling All of It. What did you learn about cooking and about meal preparation in the past year?
Hi, Allison. Hi, Sam. Well, the first thing I learned is that my New York Times online recipe box is bulging. I would say I learned two things this year. One is you have to have great things in your fridge. So we're really blessed in Astoria with some great produce and vegetable and fruit markets nearby. And the second thing I learned is in order to kind of be ready to improvise, you need great spices and herbs. So we've been restocking and experimenting with lots of different fresh herbs and spices and dried herbs and spices. So the recipes gave us the confidence to try something new, add this, add that. So I want to thank Sam and the New York Times Cooking for getting us through this year and for however long it's going to last.
Oh, thanks so much. That is so great to hear. I'm pleased. That's what we set out to do. So I'm glad it resonated.
Someone else wants to thank you as well. Renee is calling in on line 1. Hi, Renee. Thanks for calling All of It. You're on the air with Sam.
Hi. Thank you, Sam. I am not a big fan of cooking. If a recipe has more than 3 ingredients, I usually pass it by. But I've become a big fan of the New York Times Cooking this year. I've tried lots of new things. And on my own, I've improvised. If I didn't have something, if I didn't have ground turkey, I used something else. And we've been eating very well, and I've actually learned to enjoy cooking more. And it's become easier, the sheet pan recipes. And I thank you, and my husband thanks you, that we've been eating quite well this year.
Thanks for calling.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. That's so nice of you to say. Thanks.
I do want to ask about this one recipe because I love the description of it, Sam. It's crispy pork sandwiches with spicy mayo and scallions, and you call this a rendition of restaurant food made with supermarket ingredients.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit more about that description.
It sounds pretty complicated, right? Like, it's nervous making. Like, that seems like it would be a lot to make that, but it isn't really, because what you're going to do is use some fat to your advantage. Because if you can find pork belly at the supermarket, or failing that, the nice fatty pork chops, you can kind of glaze them up with a mixture of soy sauce, oyster sauce, a little chili oil, and a tiny bit of sugar, and then just broil them so that they get kind of crisp and tight on the outside, but they're so fatty, they're not drying out, and there's still bits of fat, and fat is flavor, on those planks or chunks that you've put in the broiler. Definitely line your pan with foil so that you don't scorch it with the sugars in there. And then you put those things on a hamburger bun with some mayonnaise that you've cut in some scallions and hot sauce into the mayonnaise, more fat, more flavor. That's all you're getting in restaurants, right? Is food that is fattier, saltier, more than you usually make at home. Well, what if you bring that philosophy of more back to your home kitchen and use what's around you and what's in your supermarket to just dial things up a lot? The payoff in flavor is ridiculous.
That was my conversation with Sam Sifton, founding editor of New York Times Cooking. We discussed his new cookbook, No Recipe Recipes.
NYC Now delivers the most up-to-date local news from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. With 3 updates a day, listeners get breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from across New York City. By sponsoring programming like NYC Now, you'll reach our community of dedicated listeners with premium messaging in an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to get in touch and find out more.